This is the Frogcast.
Well, hello everyone and welcome to the Frogcast. We appreciate you taking the time to listen to this special edition where we get to sit down with Mark Iztok at the NFL Network, talk about the combine, talk about frogs that are going to be in the draft, as well as a few other things that have helped make him who he is, as well as be an ambassador for the university. That and a whole lot more on this episode of the Frogcast. Well, Daniel and Trey, I appreciate you guys being here. Last time we talked, we made some bold claims about the possibility of needing a new basketball coach, and things may be heading that way, if nothing other than the record has just not improved. So, Trey, you hanging in there tonight?
Yeah, man, I'm good. Looking forward to this. Yes, you know, the basketball team hasn't been that great, so it is, you know, nice to talk about football in March, so... Yeah, I, you know, baseball team's looking good. You know, everything else is looking good, I guess, except for the basketball team. So, you know, that's another topic, but tonight should be a fun one.
It should be a fun one. Daniel, you were out at the baseball game wrapping up the series today that we won in a landslide. You hanging in there well tonight?
Yeah, just hanging up. I mean, the basketball didn't hold me over until baseball like it should, because as we discuss, it's awful. But baseball is really cranking up. It's going to be good. So I'd prefer the football, but baseball will hold me over at least until midsummer.
Well, hopefully we can make another run to Omaha. Well, we are going to talk about football tonight, so anytime you can talk about football in March is a good night. And we welcome onto our show tonight from the NFL Network, and more importantly, a graduate of Texas Christian University and a Fort Worth native, Mark Iztok. Mark, welcome to the Frogcast. We appreciate you coming on with us today.
Hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate the invitation. I am wholeheartedly in agreement with you that talking about football, especially TCU football in March, is a good thing. That we have football to talk about is a good thing.
Yes, I've complained that the draft is way too late, but it does extend the time for things like this, and I'd rather talk about TCU football than just about anything else.
Sign me up.
Yeah, well, that's what you signed up for tonight, my friend. We're here to talk about the Frogs and to talk about the draft. Mark, you've had a long journey from being a Fort Worth native to being published in the Star-Telegram at a young age, interviewing Billy Joel, to where you are now for the NFL Network. Yeah, I read your bio. I go to
Marcus. Did the research, yeah.
That's right, man. We do have the internet where I live. It's a couple
amazing.
Years old.
Yeah.
Tell us how you got from where you were as a teenager growing up around the university, which you did, to where you are now and every leap that you took to get to where you're at.
Well, it's certainly a circuitous route. I started, like you mentioned, in Fort Worth as a Fort Worth native, as a big TCU fan and sports fan. But when I started at TCU, I was pre-med and just randomly kind of happened into broadcasting and realized it was something I had always had a passion for, just hadn't realized it. And you mentioned the Billy Joel interview. When I was a teenager, I interviewed him for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram for their teen newspaper. And that was something that I thought was fun at the time, but never considered as a career. And then when the light bulb turned on for me at school, like, hey, this is something I want to do, I was kind of off to the races. So just to kind of fast forward through then to now, graduated in 98 and worked in graphics for ESPN and their mobile production facilities when they would do games. My very first game to work for them actually was the TCU-SMU game in the fall of 93. That season, we went 1-10 and the kids stormed the field after we won. So after that, worked for them for a while behind the scenes and then transferred in front of the camera for an NBC affiliate in Sherman Denison. After a year of that, and after a few years there in sports and news, made a move to Los Angeles and then kind of bounced around doing a whole bunch of different stuff between sports and news and entertainment news and tech, hosted reality shows, all kinds of different stuff, and ultimately landed back in sports for the NFL a couple of years ago and have been really happy with it.
Well, we want to talk about the NFL tonight, and Trey is going to walk us through a series of questions for you about the combine, which you were at.
Yes.
So you're going to take us deep into the combine and into some horned frogs that are hopefully going to get drafted soon.
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. So I guess first off, let's start with basically kind of an all-encompassing Josh Dotson. As I'm sure you are and a lot of other Frog fans are, a big fan of his. I think he could be one of the most productive NFL Frog players since LaDainian Tomlinson. And I think Andy Dalton's having a good career. And when he's all said and done, I think people will say he had a really solid career. But I think Josh Dotson has the potential to be really good. I mean, he has, you know, the size, the speed, the hands, the ability. So I guess kind of where do you think in the draft he's going, kind of a range? What kind of, you know, system do you think is going to fit his style, and just kind of your thoughts on, you know, him at the combine?
Well, I'll tell you first and foremost that I think I don't want to say it was as much that he turned heads at the combine with his performance as it was that he validated a lot of people's high hopes for him. And one of the cool things about the combine is seeing these guys in person against everybody else, because you pick up little cues about how smooth guys are getting in and out of the routes and how they catch the football and how they respond to being in that environment. So when he ran his 4.5, which is what I think his official 40 ended up being, it validated what he'd shown on tape in terms of his speed. And when he caught the ball in the gauntlet drill as well as he did, and he looked as smooth as he looked, I think he answered a lot of questions for people if they hadn't already. Certainly the tape on him is spectacular. So I think there are some draft analysts who have him as the number two guy in their class behind Laquon Treadwell out of Ole Miss. And there are a few that are probably itching to move him above Treadwell even because of some of the intangibles that he brings to the table too. The fact that with him, a 50-50 ball is more like an 80-20 ball. And in the NFL, that's a huge, huge asset. So where does he end up going? I think there's a lot of fingers crossed that he could be a late first rounder, maybe even sneak up into the teens, perhaps, just depending on who goes when and where and what team needs are. But I think he definitely showed that he can hang with this level, this rookie class. And it helps him too that this isn't a spectacular class of wide receivers, which only makes him rise even higher on people's lists.
So, you know, Alamo Bowl, everything that went down in San Antonio with Trevon Boykin, I guess the burning question is, do you think he plays quarterback in the NFL?
Man, I sure hope he gets an opportunity too. Watching him at the combine, I thought he did not look as sharp as he is capable of looking. He made some nice throws, but let's say you're making five throws. You want to hit four out of five of them or five out of five. And I felt like he was making nice throws on two out of five or three out of five. And he was a little bit slower than I thought, maybe because he's one of those guys who's quicker than he is fast. I thought he'd be a little bit quicker in the 40. He wasn't slow for a quarterback by any stretch. But I thought, man, if he turned heads with like a 4.65 or a 4.6, it would really get teams to want to take a flyer on him. His numbers compare really favorably to Dak Prescott. They compare especially favorably to Johnny Manziel's numbers when he was at A&M. So I'm a little surprised that teams haven't been willing to give him more of a look. But I think had he run faster, actually the fact that he wasn't quite as fast might have helped him, because let's say he runs a 4.6. That's wide receiver level speed, and a lot of teams are looking at him as a wide receiver. Well, maybe not as much anymore. So now you think, all right, well, what else can he do? Well, we know he can play quarterback. Maybe he can be a returner or something, although he still doesn't have that like real top end speed. So I hope he gets a chance that some team pulls him on their somebody picks him, pulls him on their team, and maybe he plays behind somebody and gets a chance to show what he can do, because he definitely is one of those guys that's gotten better every single year from when we saw him as a freshman, that first start against Iowa State, up till his senior year and hopefully beyond.
We've, you know, take Dotson out of the conversation real quick, and all of the other guys from TCU that either were at the combine, were at the combine. I saw you tweet the other day that you were looking at some Aaron Green film. Who do you think out of that mix has, you know, the longest stay in the league?
So aside from Josh Dotson?
Yeah, take Dotson out of it, because I think we're in agreement that he's probably at the top.
You know. Yeah,
of this. Yeah, so take him out of the mix.
I'm curious about Colby Listenby just because anytime you've got a guy who has top end speed, that's an asset. So what kind of a guy could he be? Is he a John Brown from the Arizona Cardinals? He's like a Ted Ginn for the Carolina Panthers this past year. Like, who can he be? And actually I had some comps on speed here. Let me see if I can pull them up on guys that ran similar 40 speeds. So like Mike Wallace ran a 4.33, Lee Evans, Greg Jennings ran a 4.49. So those are guys that he compares to from a speed perspective, and even a measurables perspective, like height and weight and all that kind of stuff. He's got relatively small hands, which is something that teams look at. That's why he's not as much of a possession kind of guy. But I'm intrigued to see what he could do. Obviously, Big V, Halepulivaati-Vaitai, as a lineman, he could be one of those guys that has a quiet 12 years in the league and you don't even think about it, because you don't hear their names called a lot. They don't get as much attention. So, I mean, Aaron Brown, I'd love to see get an opportunity to play, but at a position that doesn't have a tremendous amount of longevity and is not terribly difficult to find mid-grade running backs, who knows what he'll do if he could make it onto a roster.
Do you think Jaden Oberkrom can make an NFL roster? I mean, I feel like the kicking position is different than a lot of other positions. Do you think? I mean,
yeah, that's one of those that's hard to evaluate. That's one of those that's hard to evaluate just because you don't know how a guy performs when he's out there on the biggest stage, and what the rest of, like, I couldn't tell you anything about what the rest of the kickers look like, because I just have zero clue. But I know that watching him on the field, I know if he wasn't perfect, he was close on his field goal attempts. But yeah, he's again one of those guys that could have a long career and you might not even notice it because he's a kicker on a team and maybe you don't draft him for fantasy or whatever.
And when you know, you're at the combine, you're talking to people, What is the perception of, I guess, TCU, Gary Patterson, TCU players in the eyes of, you know, NFL scouts and talent evaluators? I mean, how do they, you know, talk about the Frogs? Is it positive?
Yeah, it is. I'll tell you this. I don't know when they started doing this, but they do this medal count where they add up the number of first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth places in all of the different combine events for all the position groups, and they assign medals to those. And we tied for second with, I think it was 7 medals with, it might've been Cal, and Ohio State had the first. So out of all the schools represented at the combine, TCU players certainly represented themselves well. And the scouts that I've talked to have all had high praise for what Gary Patterson does in terms of getting guys ready to play and finding talent, diamonds in the rough, taking guys that other people might overlook and turning them into high caliber players, whether it's high caliber at the collegiate level or guys that could go excel in the pros. You look at LaDainian Tomlinson, you mentioned before, and that wasn't on Gary Patterson's watch, but he was one of those guys that did not have a ton of interest coming out of college, came to TCU, obviously made something of himself and blew the doors off in the NFL. And Andy Dalton's another example, and Colin Jones on the Panthers roster. As good as Colin Jones was at TCU, it wasn't like you saw a ton of Colin Jones jerseys running around campus, but he was one of those guys who had the fundamentals and got plucked out of, I think it was Bridgeport, and has gone on to have a solid early part of his career. So I think there's a lot of respect for that. Because TCU has not traditionally gotten the 4 and 5 stars, those total studs that scouts drool over probably haven't been there on the TCU rosters as much. I think it's been more of those guys who are like, hey, watch the tape on this guy. This guy can play. A great example is Paul Dawson last year, who his numbers at the combine weren't great, but man, I know some of the scouts really, really liked what they saw from him on tape and what they felt like Patterson had done with him from a developmental perspective, turning a guy who was a wide receiver into a guy that can play linebacker in the NFL.
Yeah, following the Chicago Bears here, Jonathan Anderson started the last four or five games of the year for the Bears, and he didn't even start half the games for TCU's junior and senior year. So to see a guy like that that couldn't even see the field with the first team starting for a defense that takes pride in itself here in Chicago, that's another example of where Gary Patterson players come to play. I mean, they're ready to, you know, get coached up some more and be on the field.
No, I think you're right, and I don't want to go too far out on the limb because I haven't talked to every single scout out there about this, but certainly the impression I've gotten from those guys is that they have a lot of respect for what Coach Patterson is able to do with guys at Fort Worth, that he gets buy-in, they work hard, he takes two stars and makes them four stars. I certainly think there's a lot of respect. There may be some other schools in the Big 12, perhaps one that's, I don't know, about 70 miles south on I-35 that they don't have as much respect for what the head coach does talent wise or what those guys even do in their schemes.
You're talking about Hillsborough College, right?
I am talking about Hillsborough College, or maybe close to there.
Okay.
So it doesn't mean that they don't have talented guys coming out, but I think there's a scheme aspect and a mentality that don't always translate to getting those guys ready. And obviously Baylor has had guys who've been great pros. There's no question. They've got a lot of talent coming up this year too. But in terms of, you know, when you look for what coaches do, I think obviously top of the heap right now, it's guys like Nick Saban and Urban Meyer when it comes to getting guys ready for the NFL. But a lot of those guys are 4 and 5 stars to begin with. So the transformation is not as great there because those guys were going to be NFL bound regardless.
Yeah, I think we would all be in agreement, and you don't have to chime in to protect your integrity here, Mark. Sean Oakman's going to be a bust in the NFL. I don't think anybody sees him as a guy that's going to spend 4 years in the Pro Bowl right out of the gates. So,
there's a lot of defensive guys that are drooling over his intangibles and his measurables and how big he is and how strong he is and all that kind of stuff. But I'll tell you, they'll talk about how when you watch tape, he disappears in games and big plays and you miss them. It's not terribly dissimilar to some of the notes on Jadeveon Clowney coming out of South Carolina, that two different players, two different ceilings, but you'd see these splash plays and then you'd see him just kind of get caught up in traffic a bunch. And you wonder, well, we need a guy that can do this every play. And Oakman, his issue, if you watched any of his combine drills, his footwork, and I'm not a guy who can break down tape and I can watch his footwork and tell you it's not ideal. So I think there's some questions on, all right, he's got some work to do to realize his potential.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and agree with you completely there. And I would put it in a much more sarcastic and condescending way, but I will agree with you about
he sucks.
Okay, thank you, Daniel. Sign on with you there.
Hey, just to balance it out and to maintain that journalistic integrity, I actually liked Corey Coleman and am curious to see how he does at the pros. I'm really glad that we didn't have to face him at full strength because that guy was sick.
Yeah, he is. Now, Dotson has the advantage that he knows how to put on a t-shirt. So he's got that.
It does. And also, he can go up in traffic like no other. I mean, yeah, going back and watching Dotson's highlight reel, in our broadcast, I kind of made the comment that he has a highlight play a game. At least. So.
Well, Daniel, you got a few questions for Mark here that we had scribbled out. We'd love to hear what you have to say when we got Mark here on the line.
Yeah, just kind of a two-part question. I was kind of curious what was the combine experience like for the average participant, as well as someone like you, a reporter?
Let me tell you, it's pretty surreal. So you've got the Super Bowl 2 weeks prior to the combine, basically. And the Super Bowl is tens of thousands of fans and not a lot of football guys. I mean, you see football people make their way around San Francisco or wherever it is, but they're pretty separated from the fans. This is a complete opposite. It's all of the general managers, all these coaches, all of these collegiate players trying to make it to the pros, and zero fans because fans aren't allowed inside the facility. In fact, the only media allowed inside the stadium where the drills are occurring are those that are part of the broadcast teams covering it, or maybe some print guys. So it's so bizarre that you've got this big, however many seat stadium, Lucas Oil Stadium, and there's hardly anybody in there where all these players are running these drills. So that aspect of it is bizarre to begin with. Then you've got the, for me, before going to the combine, you think, gosh, isn't this a little bit overblown? Isn't this just underwear Olympics and maybe much ado about nothing? But you get there and you watch these guys, and maybe you were fans of them in college, or maybe you're just a college football fan in general, and you like the story of these guys trying to make their way into the pros. I thought it's a blast. And from a football perspective, I felt like I learned a lot by being around the scouts and being around the analysts as they watch the drills, picking up some of the little things that separate the good players, the great players from the good ones. And so for me, I loved it and I ate it up. And I felt like every time I come away from there, my football IQ point, you know, increases by a couple points here and there. So I really get a lot out of it. That I'll be honest, the lineman drills don't really move the needle for me for the offensive guys. But once you get to the running backs, the cornerbacks, the wide receivers and QBs, linebackers and DBs, it's a blast.
Well, speaking of the, like you mentioned the drills, did the drills that they do, and then you're talking about, some people complain because they're just running around, you know, in shorts and t-shirts and stuff, but as opposed to pads. So do the drills they do at the combine actually predict who's going to thrive in the NFL?
60% of the time they work every time. No, I think it's one of those things where for the good scouts, it's all about tape for them. It's all about what they've seen in their college tape, but there's so many guys and you can only watch so much tape. So what happens at the combine for a lot of them is you see things that either validate what you've seen on tape or make you scratch your head and go back to the tape and try to figure out why you haven't seen that yet. So let's say you're a guy who's a wide receiver who can never get open, but you run a 4.340. You scratch your head and you say, why are we not seeing that speed on tape? Well, because he never plays to that speed. So, okay, that's good to know. He's capable of it, but he's not playing to it. Is there something we can do about that? Or you see a guy who, especially for the cornerbacks, in the drills where they have to open their hips up, you watch how fluid they are and you think, okay, this is stuff that doesn't always show up on the tape and coverage, but I can see it here. And I know these are the kind of drills we're going to run in camp and as we get these players ready for the NFL. So we have a better idea of how they look next to each other. To be honest, I think certain things like the 40 is important, but guys make or lose tens of thousands or tens of millions of dollars based on a tenth of a second in the 40. And if you were to take a stopwatch and try to pound out a tenth of a second difference, I mean, it is snap, snap. It is hardly a difference at all over 40 yards. So some aspects of that, I think there's some whispers about, hey, maybe we should not have offensive linemen run 40-yard dashes, just have them run 20-yard dashes and do the cone drills. Or maybe we have the defensive backs do their 40s starting out backpedaling. And they do a drill like that for the DBs as well, too. But what if you did put guys in pads, or what if you had them do more position-specific drills? I know there's talk about that, but I think for the scouts, it's an opportunity to see them next to each other, see how they stack up. Also, for some of those guys, it's to see what they're physically built like. Does he have especially long legs or a long torso? Because those things affect body geometry and how they're able to play in space, depending upon the position.
Wow, I feel like I just got a lot smarter listening to that.
No. That is good. I don't stuff, know. I make it sound as intelligent as possible.
Well, that's a TCU degree in action right there.
It is. Let me tell you.
one of the quick questions I had here to wrap up around the football section. I got a friend of mine named Garrett Gilkey, who is an offensive lineman for Tampa Bay. Okay. He had played for Cleveland for a couple of years and spent a couple of years down in Tampa Bay. He played at Division II Shadron State out in western Nebraska, and I think it was 4 years ago. He was the only Division II player drafted out of Division II. I was the only player drafted out of Division II. How far down the list do they go looking for players? Because I've heard if you're good, they will find you. But are there literally scouts that are designated to look through and comb through FCS and Division II and obscure Division III kids and evaluate them and interview them and get to know those type of guys that are more than just you're an All-American at Alabama, so we'll draft you?
That's a great question. The only scouts that I've encountered have been guys that are assigned to, you know, it's the Big 12 scout, or it's the guy who's responsible for Texas, or he's got a region or an area. So you look at a guy like Carson Wentz from North Dakota State, and they've won, what, 5 FCS championships in a row, right? So for him, he's obviously going to get noticed because of how well his team played. But I think for some of those guys, you've got to do something to show up on a list. So maybe you're all division or, I don't know, even at that level, if they have all Americas or not, but maybe that's what you are. So I think at some point you got to be heads and shoulders above, because if you're not heads and shoulders above that level, how are you going to compete with guys who were FBS guys, guys that are headed to the NFL? So I don't know for a fact that teams have scouts devoted to those levels, but I would assume that somehow they are canvassing that as well. Probably not as diligently as the FBS level, I think for obvious reasons. One, because of resources, and two, because they probably turn up so few guys that played at that level. But there are certainly enough anecdotal stories of undrafted free agents from the second level who found a way to make it into the pros, but it's obviously an uphill climb for those guys too.
Yeah, absolutely an uphill climb. So, Trey, you got any more football questions before we wrap up with Mark here?
Oh, no, I'm good. I guess, man, really just one, not necessarily draft related, but how do you feel about the Frogs going into next season with, you know, replacing Boykin and Kenny Hill and all of that? What's your feeling?
Man, I'm excited. I probably feel better about the defense than I did at the beginning of last year, just based on the number of guys that were lost and then injured.
Yeah.
I'm excited about Kenny Hill, especially because all the reports out of Fort Worth seem to be really positive. Showing up, going to class, looking good in camp. They say he ran the scout team all last year and did a spectacular job with that. So I'm excited about him. I'm excited about the playmakers they have coming in, the JUCO transfers. Taj Williams, number one JUCO wide receiver in the country last year, ends up in Fort Worth. How huge is that when you're trying to replace Josh Doctson and Colby Lissenby and those kinds of guys? So I definitely feel like, I mean, look, I think we all went into last year thinking this was going to be the year to go undefeated and win the whole thing. I don't have that level of confidence, but just the past 2 years in general have me especially excited about it and thinking we'll be able to hang. So I assume is that a consensus opinion among you guys?
I feel pretty good. I mean, I'm with you. I think we've all heard those same things about Kenny Hill. He's kind of got things together, working hard. I think the defense has a chance to be really, really good. I think, which actually helps the offense. You know, they don't have to be as prolific as they've been in the past, because I think the defense could be really nasty. So we'll see. But yeah, I mean, I feel good.
Yeah. I think I saw a stat the other day, maybe one of the ESPN guys who covers the Big 12 might have tweeted it out, but yards per play since, I think, 2012, TCU's number one in the Big 12. And you think about a prolific offense, which opens the door for the other offense sometimes to be equally prolific, because your defense is on the field sometimes more often. And you look at a year like last year, where you had so many injuries and it wasn't the same defensive team, to still see that in the Big 12 over the past few years to be tops in yards per play, which is I like that metric actually a lot, has me again excited about what Coach P can do with guys that he's had in the system that have some starts under their belts and some of the new talent coming in. So I'm stoked about it. It's going to be weird having to get used to a new roster at some key positions when you have the luxury of rooting for some of these guys for a few years in a row, but I don't know. I'm pretty stoked. And I think also too, if you go back and you look at Kenny Hill, that freshman year at A&M, he tore it up, and it wasn't like he was horrible when he got benched. He had a couple of bad games in a row, but man, he looked really, really good at times.
Yeah, I went back and watched all of the highlights of his first seven starts at A&M, and he looked darn good. And he's going to have a much better offensive coordinator and a much better quarterback coach here at TCU. And I think the sky's the limit. You know, I don't want to you know, escalate expectations for no reason. But I think our offense will be less flashy and potentially more efficient next year. I mean, like you said about a highlight a game, I mean, there was 3rd and 12, and you just know where it's going. You're going to throw it to Josh Knox, and he's going to catch it and go for 62 yards, and everybody's going to scream their heads off. But we might just be able to pick up 14 yards the next time it's 3rd and 12, rather than, you know, rely. I mean, think about the Texas Tech game. How many catches did Josh Doxson have in that game?
Oh, he had 18, I think.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And we might not have an 18-game reception wide receiver this year for one game, but we might be able to spread out those receptions among all of the young weapons that we have coming back. And I think we're going to be just fine.
Yeah, and I think if I could pick one area that I would love to see improvement in, it would be first half defense. If you look at the numbers last year and second half defense, a lot of games, Kansas State comes to mind, Oklahoma comes to mind, where in the second half we really clamped down, but the first half we were a sieve. I think if you can... Alamo Bowl comes to mind. Man, by the way, let me tell you, Vernon Adams was at the Combine, and I loved watching that guy play this last year, and I didn't love watching him play against us, but watching him at the Combine too, I'm just glad that we didn't have to play him in the second half.
Yeah, I'm not either. He was dumb enough to take on another player that might get drafted, Derek Kindred, and that was not a dirty hit, but he went after him.
Derek Kindred ran, I think, a 4.6.
I think he was one of the top five safeties on 40-yard
dash. Yeah, really, he ran well. How different a year makes, by the way, because last year it seemed like everybody was slow. Paul Dawson was slow, and I'm blanking on our running back, guys.
BJ Catalan?
BJ Catalan wasn't quick. I mean, Dawson was really slow last year.
Yeah.
So to go from thinking, man, we must be a lot slower than I thought, to this year where guys really showed up, that was exciting. But Derek Kindred's another one of those guys where the fact that he played this past year with a broken collarbone all game, that kind of stuff matters to scouts. You'd be blown away by some of the stuff that they latch on to, and that becomes a defining characteristic of a player for these guys. Certainly, I think that turned heads.
Yeah, he was the quarterback of our defense this season. It was, no doubt about it. We don't win Kansas State without him. We don't get where we're at without Derek Kindred. He's a prototypical Gary Patterson recruit and product.
Well, and it was fun watching him too. I feel like it was a couple of years ago where, kind of like Jason Verrett in that Baylor game that he started, where he got burnt and he turns it around and becomes just a playmaker. I felt like Kindred was that way too, a guy that showed some liabilities in coverage early on and really just kind of came on as a tough, hard-hitting, really excellent safety.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Daniel, you got any more questions for Mark while we got him on the line before we let him go?
No, because I've pretty much learned so much tonight that I don't think I can ask any more questions. I think I learned everything.
That's true. I think we all learned a lot. I think our listeners are going to have appreciated this. So, go ahead.
No, I hope so. I wear my purple colors proudly and love trying to pump up the Frogs any chance I get.
We appreciate that. We need all the, it's like Mark and then Bob Schieffer. I mean, that's just kind of the way I look at it. Ambassadors for the university, you know.
There's just a one rung below. I mean, it's a big leap between those rungs, but it's one rung.
That's the way I look at it. So.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, before we let you go, Mark, I'm going to give you like four quick questions here. Just give me the quickest answer you can off the top of your head.
All right, I'm ready.
I visit you in L.A. Where are we going to get tacos?
Oh, man. Can we go to Velvet Taco in Fort Worth?
Yes, we can. Can we move it to Los Angeles?
Can we move it to LA for the day? Because that's what I would do. Or I would go to, there's a place called Border Grill that's in Santa Monica. It's almost like gourmet Mexican street food. And I've always liked their stuff. So if we can't go to Velvet Taco, we'll go to Border Grill.
That'll work. Worst class you took at TCU?
Oh, man. The class I did the worst in was organic chemistry.
Is that why you weren't pre-med anymore?
That is part of the reason, and I don't think I had the study skills at that point in time to have helped me succeed in that class. So that was pretty rough. Great professors, poor performance by yours truly.
Gotcha. Two more quick questions. Worst first date you ever went on?
I went on a first date with a girl one time who let's see, was really critical of everything, like driving and the restaurant we went to and the movie we saw. And I remember when the date ended, she invited me into her place to just hang out a little bit, and she proceeded to get on her computer and check her eBay auctions. And I was just like, yeah, how do I exit this situation gracefully?
Well, there's no graceful way to do that. I guess you lost the bid.
Right. I did. Like, if this was around smartphones, I should have gone on and bid on stuff so that the auction would have been over and I could have bailed out of there.
All right. And last question. You have to do this in a way that is safe for work.
Sure.
This was a question that we did back in November. Tell us why Baylor sucks.
Oh, man. There's so many reasons. How do I pick just one? Gosh, this is a good one. I wish I could give you a quicker answer.
That's all right.
I think Baylor, I would love to see a little humility from our Baptist friends on the Brazos. I'm sure they'd say the same thing about us. But I think the chest bumping, like, you guys have been good for a couple of years. I don't know that you earned it the same way that I feel like we did.
Yeah.
Boy, is that a narcissistic frog perspective or what?
No, that is totally objective.
I think that was that
true.
That's gospel
truth. Okay. I want to make sure.
Now, Daniel, I got to ask you, when did football begin in Baylor? When did football memory begin in Baylor?
Probably that was be 5 years ago, 2011.
2011. No such thing as football program before that.
Well, I mean, if you would ask them that question, they really wouldn't have had a response other than 61-58. So it's like that was much more eloquent and more well put. So I liked that answer.
So to go back to the whole journalistic integrity thing, I will give Baylor credit on occasion on Twitter. Like, I will say if Seth Russell hadn't gotten hurt, I don't know anybody who would have wanted to play them the last half of the season. And I think Corey Coleman was a great player. And at the end of the day, I can appreciate good players when I watch them, but I also love trolling Baylor. So
you need to join our Frogcast. You need to just be on here weekly.
It's fun.
Every once in a while, you just got to throw up a picture of that canvas brick that they put up on the stadium and just throw up a, "Hey, never forget," or a picture of RG3 and just throw up a hashtag 4241. Or I think I threw up a Connor Cook picture the other day and I put hashtag 4241. And I'm thinking there's probably about 10 people in the world who get this, but for those 10 people, they're going to get a kick out of it.
I love that.
So I love trolling Baylor on Twitter. Boy, that's fun.
Well, I guess I lied. I have one more question. What's your favorite Baylor win in a BCS or New Year's Six Bowl? Take your time.
Jeez. I'd probably have to go back to the Nunya Bowl.
That's hilarious.
I love that. I love that. Oh, well, on that note, Mark, thanks so much for taking the time to be on here with us.
Oh, guys, thanks for having me. This has been a blast.
Good, good, good. Well, I hope it's not the last time, and we would love to have you back on here for the Frogcast.
Appreciate it. I look forward to it and can't wait to listen.
All right. Well, Mark, we appreciate you being on. And so for Daniel Southern and Trey Fallon, I am Jeff Mitchell, and thank you for listening to the Frogcast.
Thanks, guys.